by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
We made it to Wednesday. Welcome, everybody, to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, along with Matt Butler. How are you, Matt?
I am doing well. Do they call it Wednesday because that's the day of the week in which you have lost your wind entirely? The wind is knocked out of your sails and you're exhausted by that day.
I don't know where the term Wednesday. That's a great question. I don't know the origin of the name of the days of the week.
It's probably something in Rome or Latin or something. It's Wednesday, though. So Wednesday is a regional accent, I believe.
Wednesdays have a bit of a comeback with the Jenna Ortega show. Have you seen any of that, by the way, Lisa Brooks?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, you are so lucky. Is it a Netflix show? Is that what Wednesday is? I believe
it is.
It's on
Netflix.
Okay.
Jenna Ortega is the actress who got it's a reboot of the Addams Family told from the perspective of their daughter Wednesday. The Wednesday's child is full of woe is how she got her name. Anyway, I digress. I'm a little woozy. I was out and about today after the 12 to 3 show.
A little bit woozy.
I'm a little skerfluffled. I'm a little off the charts today. Gonna dial in my meds. It's gonna be fine. No, I'm kidding. I was out today and I got back and I always worry when I come back to Cairo Nights that all hell is broken loose and we won't be able to use this time at night to just kind of ease back into a normal life of the 12 to 3 show is a news-driven opinion show. Mm-hmm. This is, I hope, anything but news-driven. I mean, we do things that matter to the community, but we will talk about politics when we have to. We'll talk about public safety when it's appropriate. We'll bring guests in from the Cairo newsroom like Matt Markovich when Olympia is doing something that's going to affect our daily lives. And Lisa Brooks, you did a story on MyNorthwest.com that really caught my attention because this is something I worry about. It's when the future finally gets here, the self-driving car. And I've known of various little efforts by people like Amazon and other bigger corporations that are helping to, you know, bridge the gap between what we have now and what the future will hold when nobody has to take the wheel anymore. So according to the article you have on MyNorthwest.com, very well written, by the way.
Thank you.
This is already intruding into our communities, right? And I say that because it's being tested. It's being tested in a careful, well-thought-out, well-regulated pattern. But they're testing it in our communities. They will learn from their mistakes. I worry that their mistakes will be dangerous.
Well, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to unpack. And the state has been behind this since 2017. And Governor Jay Inslee at that point issued one of those executive orders. And at that time, he said to all state agencies, you got to gear up for this, get ready for this, get ready for the testing. So the Department of Licensing, the Department of Transportation, the State Patrol, they have already put rules in place for, okay, if you're going to, if this is coming, if you're going to test it, you first got to get a certificate and then you have to follow certain parameters and then you may test it. And what's interesting is this came before any local communities said, okay, are we ready for testing? Are we not ready for testing? And so a lot of local communities haven't dealt with the issue at all, but the companies like Zoox, which is doing the testing.
Okay.
Are providing the cars. They've got the cars out on Seattle streets right now, testing things. So unless a local community says, no, you can't do it here, they're happening here.
They're happening here. And good on the governor for being so forward-thinking.
Yeah. And they're at level three. There's five levels of autonomous vehicles. Levels one and two are like your smart cars that we've got already.
That can self-park, those kind of things.
Right. But level three is where the testing is. And level three means you've got to have someone behind the wheel just in case, but otherwise they're self-driving. And that's what we're seeing in Seattle.
So level five, the final level, is when they just go where they go and no one's inside. They're completely trusted.
That's when you've got an inflatable mattress in the car and your nice tunes and your hot cocoa by yourself.
And it's just taking you around. That's the Futurama that I'm thinking of from various movies like Minority Report, Tom Cruise. Nobody drove in that. Total Recall, another movie where they got the Johnny Cab with electronic cab drivers. So what's being tested, if I understand correctly, there are like some cities outside of this being tested in many cities across the country. One of the things they're doing is like a closed loop course, kind of like a bus line, say on a college campus or a campus, a work campus like Cupertino, where Google is down in California, or Amazon in various other cities, or Microsoft in Redmond.
Right, or hospital campuses.
Hospital campuses,
that's
okay.
That's where they think this kind of thing is going to happen first here. But there are a couple of cities around the country where this is happening. I think one is in Greensboro, North Carolina.
And your Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah, not Michigan, but Minnesota. And they are, they're shuttle services that are, I kind of liken it to, you know, that train that runs around SeaTac Airport, the North and South concourses.
Yes, yes. Or the monorail at Disney.
Yeah.
Kind of a
yeah.
closed course, regular loop.
Right.
Where this thing, without being tethered to a rail.
Yes.
Or, you know, it can drive, it's just a driving thing, but it's on a pre-programmed closed course without having to deviate to take a package to this guy's house or pick up a fare way over there.
Right.
And thus interact more with everyday citizenry.
Yes. Interesting point. You mentioned package to everybody's, to people's houses. One thing we didn't get to in the My Northwest story is that the state has already not only certified testing, but has licensed 200 package delivery. Those little, they look like coolers on wheels.
I've seen them.
Where have you seen them?
Okay, so we're talking about Amazon drone delivery on the ground, not in the air.
Right.
And when I say drone, people think flying. And maybe that's the wrong terminology for the, but it looks like one of the things Luke Skywalker bought in the first Star Wars movie. I mean, it looks like one of those little trash can droids.
Yeah.
I saw one up in just north of Linwood, maybe still in the Linwood proper area, and it was cruising down a sidewalk. And it had a big Amazon. It was blue, that Amazon blue with a big smile on the side. Okay. So I knew it wasn't labeled anything else, just had that smile on the side, the Amazon A to Z smile. And it was trucking down a sidewalk. It wasn't like intermingling with traffic.
Right.
And it was programmed delivery. You know, going to somebody's door, kicking the package out of the door, and then coming back. So those are already moving through the area.
200 of them.
And I guess the goal eventually is to have trucks that are automated and driverless. And I don't know, if you then send a little shuttle out from the truck to the car, to the door, like you would a driver, right? You just truck it out to the curb and drop it at the front door and come on back. So did you hear the story two weeks ago we had it, where Ford was patenting all these new innovations that they've come up with? Ford Motor Company files hundreds of patents annually. They're always on the cutting edge of technology and advancement to make our driving safer, more fuel efficient, whatever else. They're patenting technology that lets cars drive themselves, they have technology that can dismantle various features of your car. From afar, from Ford, from your lender. Like, they can turn off your air conditioning if you get behind on your payments.
Oh, you mean they start small and nasty?
Yeah, exactly. A month into being late on your payments, they can shut off your air. Or they can shut off your ability for your car's radio to bring entertainment or news or whatever into your car.
That's not nice.
With the final goal being, when you far so far behind, it's self-repossessing cars.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that scares me. It's coming.
Yeah.
I guess all change scares everybody. Change is hard to do. Change is one of the hardest things for a human to do. And the only thing we can ever count on, the only consistency, is change, right? Things always evolve.
True. But it's coming a little bit later than we think. I talked to Daniel Lai. He's the project lead for the city of Bellevue and the city of Seattle. Got together to look at they spent more than a year, well more than a year, looking at every possible contingency for uses for, they call them AVs, all autonomous vehicles.
Okay.
And they looked at, you know, when are the shuttles going to happen? When is the rideshare going to happen? When is that? And what does that mean for our city streets? And what does it mean for our urban planning? And how is this going to be working between communities? And Daniel said that every single time they think they have a date for when self-driving cars are going to happen, it gets pushed back.
Yeah.
We just don't know yet, but maybe within 5 years, we'll see the shuttle services.
Okay. So we're still, you know, a generation probably away.
who knows?
From the air mattress and the hot
maybe,
cocoa
yeah.
in the back. Like I love that. At that point, I'm welcoming automated driving. You know, I got to tell you, when I drive out in the city, I spend a lot of time driving. I mean, I shuttle back and forth to home numerous times a day of late. Mm-hmm. My youngest child is off in school, but she's 19 and doesn't have her license. And I that's a whole nother topic. We talked about how Gen Z doesn't care about driving as much as previous generations did. Their lives are more connected socially. They don't have to be physically connected to life. But my kid never wanted, she got her learner's permit, then COVID hit. Mm. And that screwed all this scheduling up. You couldn't even take a test for over a year. You couldn't go into the DMV for a year. By the time it was opened up again, she had forgotten how to drive. I tried to teach her again, tried to teach her on a manual. Because I want my older daughter, my older daughter learned on a manual.
Yeah.
I want my younger to learn on a manual because you have to be more attentive to the car.
Yep.
Much harder to be distracted by the things that kids are distracted by. I say that because I don't care that my kid doesn't drive. I'm happy to shuttle them around. It takes the worry off of them being on the road. That's something I went through the first time with my first kid. So anyway, that being said, I'm on the road all the time. I'm more worried about the drivers I face on a daily basis than
Automated.
Yeah. Thank you. I kept wanting to say automated, but that's not quite. Automated vehicles. Autonomy, whatever.
Just call them AVs.
AVs. Thank you. AVs. I'm more worried about distracted drivers.
Yeah.
I'm more worried about speeders because we don't pull tickets anymore. Story that 90% reduction in tickets issued in Seattle and elsewhere. I'm more worried about people who feel that there is nobody watching. And if they're watching, they don't care. They speed like crazy. They're on their phones. I almost welcome AVs. Those, at least I know they're programmed to do the right thing. There's going to be screw-ups. I love that there's somebody still in the car for now as they're testing these things. Like, much like driving ed, you had the extra brake pedal.
Oh, right.
Remember the cars with two steering wheels?
Yes.
And then the extra brake pedal on the,
yes.
on the... Even when they had just the one steering wheel in a driver's ed car, they had that, like, cheater bar that brought the brake pedal over to the passenger side so the instructor could jam the
yes.
brakes on anytime they wanted
yes.
to. That's what's being done right now with AVs. And you say it's probably another 5 years before even the first wave, the shuttles
before
on these
the shuttles.
Closed courses.
Right.
Now,
in Washington.
In Washington. Are they talking about like public use shuttles, like mass transit is used now, public transportation is used now, being AVs, driverless buses, those kind of things within 5 years?
No, these were the campus shuttles.
These were the closed course
campuses. The medical facilities, the Microsoft campus kinds of things.
So I'm probably going to have to get my kid her license. I'm not sure I'll be able to hold her off for another 10 years so
probably
the car
not.
Can drive itself.
But coming second, they think, is the ride-hail services. So maybe...
Now that's where an AV will come to you like on request?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And those are the ones that are going to be interacting with everyday drivers through everyday communities.
We think so, but they're also looking at ways to change the roadways. So whichever communities are, so there's going to be like a pedestrian lane, a bike lane,
an AV lane.
Wow. And then everybody else.
Really?
Yeah. The report's really interesting. We've got a link to it on mynorthwest.com. They even have some artwork of what they think these envision some of these
proposed traffic way, yeah. pattern ways could look
yeah.
like.
Fascinating.
That is awesome. You know, what I often beat up Seattle local government for overthinking things, for over testing, over studying. Let's do some more research on whether we'll have another year and a half's worth of research on whether or not we should run a monorail from Ballard to West Seattle. Remember when that one was going to go?
Oh, yeah. That was so close,
remember,
too, wasn't it?
Yeah. And and they bought up all the land at the
right,
height of the market,
right.
and then it didn't happen, and they had to sell the land at a tremendous loss. I always beat the city up for taking so long. You know, like our light rail, by the time it gets to Everett and gets to Tacoma and gets over the lake, it's going to be only 25 years behind the times.
Yeah.
And by the time it finally gets here.
Could it happen in the 1960s with, what was it, the forward thrust? Or
Yeah. But this, it seems like, at least the governor, like you said, 2017, they put this onus on planning and regulating and making cities think forward to be prepared for this thing coming because it's coming.
And the study is so comprehensive that it's probably going to be used as a model by other communities around the country.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I take some pride in that.
Yeah.
As a forward-thinking city like we are, Seattle.
And Bellevue. They combined efforts on this.
There you go.
I'm sure everyone in Bellevue on this study is going, wait, what about us?
And they probably paid a good bit of going into the study, too. That's it. Lisa, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was great. I love this. okay, so my fears have been assuaged. Thank you very much. I don't have to worry about, you know, getting run over by a driverless car anytime soon. I'll probably be old enough to be off the road and just, you know, eating pudding for three meals a day by the time these things are on the road that I have to worry about.
I'm just impressed, Spike. I mean, you chauffeur your kids everywhere. Your wife flies first class. You are really the king of luxurious transportation for your family.
Other people's.
Yes, other people's. You don't get to do any of these things.
You know what? I got to tell you, Matt, I appreciate that first off. I appreciate that. When I mentioned my wife flies first class when she travels because I've traveled with my wife back in coach numerous times. And it's a truly unpleasant experience for everybody involved. My wife has travel anxiety. You know, she has a little bit of a fear of a lack of control stemming from her being in a car when she was very young in a pretty serious car accident. So yeah. My wife doesn't have control of the vehicle she's in. There's a sense of anxiety that goes inherently with that.
Definitely.
That's so, and it's not like I'm trying to spoil my wife. I am a little bit, but I'm actually, I could probably write these off for medical reasons. I hadn't even thought about that. But my wife has documented travel anxiety.
Right.
So when she's up front, everybody in the back of the plane has a better flight. And I should make the people around me pitch in.
And I should crowdfund it.
Crowdfund it. And because believe me, folks, you know, half the flight will fly her back here. And you tell me if it's worth the first class ticket for the second half flight. And I should declare that on my taxes. But I also got to tell you that when I drive my youngest around, when I chauffeur them around, it's time I miss now that they're off to college. I enjoy the time in the car chatting up my youngest about what's going on in their world. Because, you know, if you don't, like we mentioned last night, talking about social media, you know, communication with your kids, eyeball to eyeball, face to ear communications, that's what matters. Not just texting your kid, what do you want for dinner? Because your house is so damn big, you never see their face. I got that problem too. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. This is from the movie FM, right?
Indeed it is.
It was, yeah. This, of course, now is this Donald Fagen or all of Steely Dan?
This is all of Steely Dan.
Okay, gotcha. Oh, what a band. Two guys. They toured with touring musicians, but am I right about that? Fagen and Becker, two guys did everything on these records.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if they got the recognition or appreciation they deserved. I mean, Prince, everybody knows that Prince was a virtuoso, a musical genius that played, and it played anything, every instrument possible. These two guys, same level of brilliance.
I think Steely Dan is one of those bands you have to really appreciate them beyond the singles. You have to be really into music. Like, they were musicians.
Yes.
So it became popular, I think, in the press and in pop culture to be critical of some of the Steely Dan fans because they were viewed as elitist, you know, sort of the East Coast Ivy League.
Yeah, the tweed jacket patch, exactly. The patched elbow crowd.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Which led to a lot of people, you know, that's under appreciation.
It's true,
it
yeah.
It means that sometimes you don't appreciate these artists because of the image. I mean, Dave Matthews gets that. Fish gets that. There are a lot of artists with just a certain image that some people don't connect on, and it becomes an inverse thing where it's fun to poke fun at that. Steve Albini, who produced a lot of great rock and indie records, he is not into Steely Dan at all. Like, just a couple of weeks ago, he was taking them down on Twitter.
Steely Dan?
Yeah. For some reason, he has this.
Like the old Steely Dan, the classic Steely Dan stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
He just does not like them.
You know, the Dead had the same problem. They were judged by their audience. I think you're saying the same thing about Steely Dan here. You know, and don't get me wrong. You know, I love the Dead. I love Dead music. It's not schooled the way Steely Dan is. It's much more free form, and I'm being very careful how I say that.
It's improvised.
Yes. This Steely Dan has that jazz element to it.
Right. They
which
were
is,
very technical
yes.
and specific, which is also what makes it great in a different way.
Absolutely. Cairo Nights, you know, I heard the story earlier. I think it was Gene Ursula talking about it. And it's the airline fees. The government is trying to figure out a way to, and this is a Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, whose plate's been pretty full of late between, you know, massive airline cancellation situations. Was it Southwest that had their entire scheduling and booking platform just collapse? And then, of course, the train fees and all, or the train wrecks and all those things. Pete Buttigieg is busy. They're trying to figure out how to make sure that the airlines don't nickel and dime us to death, for lack of a more sophisticated and jazzy way to say that. Airline fees is what I'm talking about. And, you know, these days, you know, I don't know how long, Matt, have you had a chance to travel much by air throughout the course of your life?
There have been periods in my life where I was a fairly frequent flyer, yes.
How long ago would you, you're 40-ish?
Yeah, 40.
And you've been traveling probably 20 years you've been in the air?
Yeah. So
you were pre everything was an add-on.
Yes.
When you first started, and same way for me, I probably started flying
although
30 years ago.
Although I flew overseas, so the time I spent in the UK, there were a lot of those budget airlines, the Ryanairs and the other ones of the world, where
right.
everything was very much that way.
And that it didn't used to be the way in America. And
you see they introduced a stand-up seat?
Did that ever happen?
I don't know if they reversed that plan, but there was a plan where you could actually, to save money, fly standing up.
Well, I saw an artistic mock-up or a prototype for advertising purposes of this, and this was, I think, on Ryanair, which is the bargain basement, you know, get anywhere in Europe for $69. We had taken a couple trips to Ireland over the years. We did it through radio, but my wife and I, after the first year going to Ireland by myself, I took the very the truly unpleasant Mrs. O'Neill went to every other trip to Ireland because nothing that makes my wife more miserable than not going on a vacation when I get to go somewhere nice. Anyway, we went over to Ireland and we planned a day trip to Venice because it was only $70, $69 each of us to travel from Dublin to Venice. And I'm thinking, when are we ever going to get back here to see Venice? And we didn't go, and we never got back, so we knew. I ended up getting sick that trip. I got 1 year in Dublin, I got food poisoning, and I'll miss the entire week in Ireland. I dragged my pale, dehydrated self to the distillery on St. Patrick's Day to do the actual broadcast. But other than that, I missed the entire week just being sicker than I've ever been in my life. Anyway, there was a time when airlines... You know, you bought a ticket and, you know, you got to check a bag for free. I mean, I'm not that old. I'm sure most of you remember the same things, right? You buy a ticket and you bring a bag. If you want to bring a second bag, okay, that's an extra fee. If your bag weighed too much, that was a fee too because, you know, it cost them more to haul heavier gear around. But then they started just charging for everything. You know, the bag fee itself. They used to give food to everybody on a plane. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, they always charge you for liquor as well. They should. But these days, no matter what you want 3 more inches of leg room, there's a premium seat upgrade for you. You know, you want in-flight entertainment, that's a fee. You can buy, you can rent. It used to be a little box they had, but now you can just rent access.
You want Wi-Fi that only works for 5 minutes of your flight? Additional fee,
yeah. And you're wondering, you know, G and Ursa were talking about it, and they're like, why don't they just tell us the price up front? Put it all together in one package and tell me how much it costs. The reason they don't do that is because of the way we travel now. We find tickets online through search engines, whether it's through a particular airline's website or whether it's through one of the aggregate sites like a Kayak or a Hotwire or whomever else, Expedia, Travelocity. You know, for airlines want to come up higher on your search results. So the lowest price is what people shop for. And people shop, very rarely do they shop with like brand loyalty with a particular carrier. And I heard Heather Bosch today talking about this particular story. And one recommendation from a travel industry insider was to always have a favorite airline and travel frequently with them so you can build up value with them, points with them, leverage with them, get the rewards of being a frequent flyer. Not all of us can afford to be frequent flyers. We take the trip when we can, and it's very rare these days, especially during a tough economy. So if they actually told you what it costs to fly with a bag, with a meal, with a little bit of a better seat, maybe having all your, now they're charging for, to have families sit together. If you want to get four tickets together, used to be they would move people around to accommodate a family of four. You know, they would move folks that were already booked on the plane, but that doesn't happen anymore. Now they want an extra fee for that as well. If they told you what the actual flight costs with all the things you want on your ticket, then, you know, they won't come up so well in the search results. So they give you that bare bones to buy in, and then they just nickel and dime you, inch you up to the bottom. And I think G said, why don't they just tell us what it costs? Well, there is a way that you can buy a ticket, and you'll know exactly what you're paying no matter what you want. It's first class. You know, everybody gives me grief for buying a first class ticket for my wife, but by the time she gets two bags free, by the way, if we both sat back in the coach, that's $100 we're not paying right now because she's taking her bag and my bag. Right? I'm not buying her meal. I'm buying mine. That's another $15. It adds up pretty quick. It's not a bad deal when my wife flies first class. And again, everybody in the back has a better flight. There used to be a thing, what was it called? A travel agent that you could call up at a travel agency. They would shop around for you. They often had better deals available than the public could get their hands on because they got little kickbacks from the airlines for sending people that way. I miss the days of full-service travel agents. I miss the days of getting what you paid for. Don't seem like you get that on airlines anymore. Yeah, get off my lawn. It's Spike O'Neill. Cairo Knights, along with the great Matt Butler, the maestro. We'll be back right after these, folks.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
A little on the newer Springsteen. God, this must be 15, 20 years old by now, though.
Yeah, this was from Human Touch back in 92.
Yeah. That was one of the two albums that he put out. Lucky Town and Human Touch, right? I think it was. And he had jettisoned the E Street Band. Wanted to go in a different direction, try out playing with new players. I got to see that tour.
Very kind of a new wavy sound on that one.
Yeah, very, very early 90s centric. Yeah. 57 channels and nothing on. Bruce could always write a nice catchy little hook for you there. I heard this story from Matt Markovich, Matt Butler, my dear friend, down in Olympia. They're talking about requiring proof of insurance before you'll renew someone's car tabs. Now, you already have to have car insurance to drive in Washington. Driving without insurance is a ticketable offense. And it makes sense. If you're going to be operating a vehicle and putting other people's property and lives at risk, you should have insurance. If you finance a car, buy a car that you are making payments on, don't own outright, you are required to have insurance. Comprehensive insurance, should you total that car, that the bank who lent you the money for the car is going to be made whole. Should you put that car in a hole somewhere or over a ridge somewhere. But a lot of people riding dirty, don't have insurance. A lot of people. I know they won't give you your tabs if you've got, say, outstanding tickets. You know, they can pull up tickets now. When you try to get your tabs, they'll pull up your license and say you've got outstanding fines, tickets, toll fees. And until you make whole all your financial responsibilities, you can't get new tabs on your car. And I think this will pass. I think they're going to strap that to our tab acquisition as well. Verifiable insurance coverage. They'd license all the motor vehicle licensing facilities, which are independent but licensed throughout the state of Washington as well. It's a pretty easy thing to do now with the computer networks that we have. I'd be shockingly surprised if they didn't. I guess the real question I'm asking is, since they're not pulling anybody over for anything anymore, including expired tabs, am I just a sucker for paying for my tabs? I mean, it's the responsible thing to do. Right. I mean, my tab fees go to help pay for maintenance of our roadways and the various things that make our roadways safe to use and safe to be on.
And it's also a roll of the dice because, I mean, you could very easily be the person that they catch. So,
Well, plus
taking any chances.
And if you get caught for something else, that's just going to be piled on. And if you let those things stack up and add up, then the little bit of a drip, drip, drip here of financial commitments become mountainous avalanches that you can never get out from under. And there are late fees and penalties associated with all these things that you decide not to pay. I'm of course kidding. Am I a sucker? I know I'm not a sucker. I don't feel like a sucker for doing my part to make sure that these are the laws of civilization, folks. These are the things we promise to do for each other that make it a better community for each other.
Civilization, though, isn't that becoming a lost concept to some people?
God, you're so right. It really is. That this marauder, me, myself, and I got mine, you go get yours mentality, put up the wall, close society. We don't need the world. We were better off when we didn't support all these other things abroad. I mean, that could take you all the way to the should we support the war in Ukraine mentality. Is that a nationalist when you're just concerned about America and American lifestyle, quality of life?
I would call it short-sighted nationalism because you don't recognize the impact that other events have on the safety and security of your nation. I'll give you an example. If you don't want a lot of refugees coming into the United States, then foreign aid in cooperation with other countries may help those people be more at home and be better provided for in their country. All of these things, problems accumulate. We've seen it in centuries of all forms of public policy. These things add up. They build up. It's like putting stuff in a landfill. It just piles up if you don't deal with it.
Well, I love your analogy. I love your example. Because, why is there this rush from the southern border? Why is it all of a sudden everybody's dying to get into America? Why is this caravan after caravan after caravans being threatened? It's because we stopped foreign aid to that portion of Central and South America where drug cartels take over the country and the government can't support or take care of its people or protect its people. And if you don't invest in those countries, you're right. Those become unlivable places, and here comes the wave of immigration seeking a better, safer life in America. The same thing that brought all of our forefathers here, by the way. It was okay when the English came, when the Irish came, when the Italians came, when the Asians came, whatever. It was okay. It wasn't okay at the time, by the way. The same way a lot of people vilify immigration today, that's nothing new. That's always been the case in America. When I was a young kid in school, I found a book once in our school library, which wouldn't be allowed today, by the way. It was about the history of indentured servitude among Irish-American immigrants. When the Irish moved here, in many, many cases, they couldn't afford to move here. They couldn't afford that there was a famine and a plight in Ireland. There was a revolution in Ireland, right? The Irish war for independence in the early 1900s. And Irish fled to America, but they didn't have the money to not just get here, but set themselves up with a home when they got here. So they went into indentured servitude, usually the period of 7 years, where you were literally a unpaid servant for a period of time while you paid off the cost of coming to America. Indentured servitude. We've always been that way with immigrants, but Matt's right. That's why it's like preventive care for other countries to keep their population from coming here to seek a better life, make sure they have a better life there. It's one planet. It's one globe. I love this job. Cairo Knights, I'm Spike O'Neill. Matt Butler's in the other room on the board playing the music. Heard a quote today from a potential GOP presidential candidate, and it speaks exactly to your point about the beaming one planet and when caring about foreign aid. We'll have it right after this.